All right, again, folks, we'd like to welcome you to the Platform Teleseminar tonight with Michael Hyatt. My name is Daniel Decker. I'll be moderating tonight. If you have a question that you'd like to submit during the call, you can email that to me, to daniel@higherlevelgroup.com. You can tweet it. Just make sure you use that hashtag, PlatformBook. I'll be paying attention to that tonight, and we'll try to bring some of those questions into Mike throughout the call. Like I said earlier, we do have a lot of questions that were submitted upon registration, so we'll get through some of those as well. And kind of the format that we're going to take tonight is Michael is going to share some of the platform insights for the first half hour of the call, and then we'll step into the Q&A portion to the second half of the call. So with that said, Mike, I'll turn it over to you so we can begin.
Great. Thanks, Daniel. And thanks, everybody, for joining this call. This is actually only the second teleseminar I've ever done, certainly the largest conference call I've ever done. So I'm very grateful that you would set aside an hour to spend with us on this call. And I want to just share a little bit about the overall concept about platform and sort of set it up for the questions. And for some of you, some of the things I'm going to share are going to be a little advanced. And for some of you, it's going to seem enormously elementary. So for those of you for whom this is seems really advanced and you're not sure some of the things I'm talking about, hang in there, and we'll try to clarify that in the questions. For those of you, on the other hand, where this seems really simple, I would just encourage you to assume the posture of listening for your brother-in-law. You know the one I'm talking about, the one who's always asking you about blogging or, you know, what they can do to get their business off the ground or do marketing. You know, just listen for them, and hopefully I'll make it simple enough for them. I've got one of those too. But more than four centuries ago, William Shakespeare said it best, I think, when he said, "All the world's a stage." And if it was true then, it's more true now than ever, because if you've got something to say or to sell, whether it's a product, a service, a brand, or just you, you're on stage. But the stage is very crowded, as you've probably figured out, because we've got, just for example, more than 164 million blogs in the world right now. Last year, 2011, there were more than a million books that were published just in the United States alone, and that was up about 400% from the previous year, largely because of self-publishing. And I just checked Amazon the other day, and there were about 27 million books for sale in its U.S. Store online. So that's a lot of noise out there. Of course, thousands of television and radio shows, more video uploaded to YouTube in the last 60 days than was produced by all three major networks in the first 60 years of their existence. And that doesn't even include Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus and LinkedIn and now Pinterest and apps and games. Just a tremendous amount of noise out there, which is, of course, why you need a platform. And I'm often asked in interviews, what is a platform? And for many people, this is a term they've been using for several years, but in case you're wondering, here's how I'm using it. A platform is that thing that you stand on to be seen or to be heard. And originally, it was just a small hill. Think Sermon on the Mount. Or it was a wooden stage. And of course, it's gotten more complicated because now we have these supersized stages made of trusses with thick metal flooring and mountains of speakers, hundreds of lights, smoke. But today's platforms are very different. The kind of platforms I'm talking about are really made up of people. It's your contacts, your connections, your customers, prospects, followers, fans, whatever you, but it's really the people. So let me just tell you just a little bit by way of introduction how I got interested in this topic. Most of you know that I've spent most of my career in the book publishing world, most recently as the CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishers. But about 10 years ago, before I became the CEO, I started noticing this disturbing trend with authors that we were talking to about getting published. Many of them came with brilliant ideas, compelling proposals, well-written manuscripts, and yet we were turning them away largely because they didn't have a platform. And the economics of publishing had changed such that we could no longer afford to invest in an author, in most authors, to build their platform. We could amplify it, we could leverage it, but we couldn't afford to do it from scratch. And so then I noticed there were a lot of other businesses that also needed a platform. I had friends here in Nashville, Tennessee, where I live, who were in the recording industry, comedians, magicians, public speakers, even small business owners and other brand managers. All of them needed a platform. And about that same time, I started blogging. And I realized pretty quickly that this had the potential to be a platform and that something was shifting, but I didn't quite know what. And some of you have seen this or maybe read it on my blog where I shared my traffic statistics for the first 8 years of blogging. And I wished I had that graphic to show you tonight, but let me just kind of give you the big picture. In 2004, for the first year I was blogging, on average, I only attracted about 110 readers a month. And if you subtract my family and the screen refreshes that I was doing myself, I didn't have a lot of readers. But it grew a little bit. It doubled the next year to 225 readers in an average month. And then the next year, 450, then 700. And then in 2008, something dramatic happened. I hit an inflection point, and it went to about 20,000 readers a month. And let me just keep going here, and I'm not doing this to brag, but I'm going to come back to a very important point as it relates to you as you try to build your platform. Then in year six, this would have been 2009, I averaged about 43,000 readers a month. Then in year seven, 59,000. Year eight, 183,000. And year nine, so far this year, I'm averaging about 261,000 readers a month, including about 300,000 unique visitors last month. So again, why am I telling you this? Well, a couple observations that I hope are encouraging to you. It took me more than 4 years, and this is the first observation, it took me more than 4 years to break 1,000 readers a month. So don't despise the days of small beginnings. Everybody starts small. No such thing as an overnight success. You just have to get out there and work at it. I did hit an inflection point in 2008, and there were a couple of reasons for that. One is that I started blogging more consistently. I went to about three times a week, and I really committed that I would blog three times a week no matter what. And I really found my blogging voice in doing that. I also began using social media. I wasn't on Twitter before then. I really wasn't on Facebook. And so I started using those more strategically in reaching out to people and bringing them back to my blog. And then I had the blessing, I guess, of some big blog sites like the Huffington Post and Lifehacker linked to me, and that drove a lot of exposure to a whole new audience, and a lot of it stuck. But just an observation here is that a lot of people quit, and I hope this is not you, but a lot of people quit right before they hit that inflection point and right before their platform begins to take off. Another observation I would make about those numbers is that I built the platform before I needed it. You know, it's kind of like the old adage of when's the best time to plant a tree? Well, probably 25 years ago. When's the second time best time to plant a tree? Well, today. Same thing's true for a platform. You know, the best time to have built it probably would have been about 5 years ago. You could probably use it now. It's probably why you're on this call. But the second best time to build one is today, and I'll talk more about that later. But I could have done it faster today if I had known then what I know now. And that's why I tried to distill everything that I learned in the process into the book Platform, which many of you have seen. And if you haven't seen it, you can find it at michaelhyatt.com /, and I want to give you a special link tonight, teleseminar, michaelhyatt.com/teleseminar. But the book basically is five parts, 60 chapters, step-by-step instructions, real-world experience. I don't recommend anything in the book that I haven't done and proven in the lab of my own blog experience. But and while I'm at it, let me just mention on that page, if you go to that, again, michaelhyatt.com/teleseminar, that if you buy the book because you're on this call, I'll give you three free bonuses when you buy the book, and all you have to do is forward your receipt, whether it's from a brick-and-mortar retailer or an online retailer, to the email address that I give on that page, and I'll give you all the digital editions of the book. So buy the physical book, and you'll get Kindle, Nook, iPad, PDF. You'll also get the unabridged audio, so if you prefer to consume it like I do when you're running or on a commute. And then I've got a 45-minute video lecture that I gave at a keynote about a little over a year ago called Why Now is the Best Time Ever to Be an Author. So that sounds like a commercial. It kind of was. So that's a limited offer. It's going to go. We're going to run it for a week, and once it's gone, it's gone. But I'm still in the introduction, but building a platform provides you with three key benefits. Number one, visibility. This really goes back to the metaphor of a stage. It provides a way for you, no matter what kind of business you're in, to have visibility with other people, for others to be able to see you. So that's the benefit, the first benefit. Second benefit is amplification. It allows your voice to be heard when you have a platform. It's especially true because of social media. A microphone leverages your voice, and so does a platform. And then I think the biggest benefit of all, the third one, is connection. Traditional media only really provides for unilateral intimacy. In other words, people think they might know Matt Lauer because he's communicating with them on TV every day, but there's no real mechanism for communicating back to Matt. There's no real conversation. There's no real relationship. The kind of platform I'm talking about, the new social media platforms, provide for bilateral intimacy where you have a conversation. And I'll have more to say about that as we move through this time together. But everything has changed in the last 6 to 7 years. And boy, you know, I knew that it was changing in the book publishing world. Everything was going digital, but I didn't really see the potential and the power of social media until I started using it for myself. But it used to be that somebody else owned the platform. You couldn't get access to that platform unless you could get past the gatekeepers. Somebody had to pick you. A producer had to pick you, for example, to host a radio or a television show. Or an editor had to pick you to write a magazine or a newspaper column. Or a publisher had to pick you to publish a book. Or, alternatively, you could invest millions of dollars in building an alternative media channel or building your own platform. But social media has changed all that. And now, for the first time in history, non-celebrities, people like you and me, can get noticed in an increasingly noisy world. So here's now let me just move into the main content here tonight, and that's this. My thesis for this session is that you can build a powerful personal platform by taking just 5 steps. And when I speak on this publicly, I've got this really cool new graphic of somebody ascending a stage and going up 5 steps. So just imagine that here for a second. But step number one, again, there's 5 steps. Step number one, and these do correspond to the parts in the book. Step number one is start with wow. Man, this is critically important that you do start with wow. Because David Ogilvy, who was a great advertising genius about 2 generations ago, said it best when he said, great marketing only makes a bad product fail faster. So I used to say to my team at Thomas Nelson, it's the product, stupid. It really starts with the product. That's where we have to begin. We have to get that right. Because of word-of-mouth advertising and because of the phenomenon of word-of-mouth marketing, and that's especially true in the age of social media, because essentially what social media has done is it's given everybody a megaphone and everyone is connected to everyone else. So word-of-mouth really spreads quickly. And so what you've got to do is at the very beginning, if you're going to build a platform, is you've got to create wow. You've got to create something remarkable. And here's how I define wow. Wow is that positive gap that exists between what someone expects and what they experience. So a couple of years ago, Gail and I were on vacation in Destin, Florida, and there was a new movie that was coming out that had really been hyped in the media, and we were really excited about it. So one afternoon, we decided to go to the matinee, and we went into the theater and got our popcorn, got our Coke, and sat down in the theater, by the way, all by ourselves, which should have been a clue. Nobody else was there, but we started watching this movie. And again, we were very excited about it, but as it began, about 5 minutes into it, we looked at each other sort of with this puzzled look, and said, you know, this is not what we thought it was going to be. It's not that good. It's not that exciting. And so, you know, we sort of suffered through the movie, but we really didn't want to talk about it to anyone. In fact, I think we both tweeted at the time that we were disappointed in this particular movie. That's the opposite of wow, and that's what you don't want to have happen. That's why movies can open on a Friday night and be dead by Sunday, because somebody didn't engineer the wow. They didn't take time to assess what the customers or the prospects expected and then made sure that they exceeded those. So you've got to design products, services that you yourself would use. If you're a blogger, you've got to write blog posts that you would want to read. You've got to be able to express your passion. And at the same time, and this is the real challenge, I think, for all of us, is that we've got to balance that with shipping what we're creating. We can't get so locked up in perfectionism that we procrastinate. In fact, I say in the book that perfectionism is the mother of procrastination, and it really is. You want it to be wow, but you also want to balance that with shipping it and getting out the door and accepting the idea, and I wrote about this on my blog earlier this week, about the idea of permanent beta. In other words, Google began this, I think, with Gmail back in the day, but they released have released these major products, and they've referred to them as beta because they're constantly tweaking, constantly improving, and we want to be able to do that too. When we exceed the customer's expectations, they have new expectations, and we have to exceed them for the next go-round. So step one, start with wow. Step two, prepare to launch. And when I'm talking about launching, I'm not talking about an event so much as I'm talking about a process, because the truth is we're always launching something. You know, it may be a new product that we're launching, maybe a business, maybe a cause, maybe a ministry. It could be 1,001 things, but we're always launching something. And what I talk about in the book is the importance of your mindset. And the first thing that's important when it comes to your mindset is accepting responsibility for the outcome. It's no one else's job to build your platform. This is not something that can be delegated. You can enroll other people. You can solicit their help. You will use other people in this process, but you can't delegate responsibility. You've got to be able to look in the mirror and really assume responsibility that you are the chief marketing officer for that thing you're about to launch. You're the best spokesperson. Nobody knows the product better than you do. You've got the most probably at stake, the most to win or to lose. And so you've got to assume the responsibility, not resent it, not begrudge it, but to embrace it and say, yes, I'm going to build a platform. I know it's busy. I know it's time consuming, but that's just part of it today. It's not enough just to build a great product or build a great service or a business. You've got to assume responsibility for the platform building component of that as well. I would say another aspect of this, though, is that you need to set specific goals as you're thinking about building your platform and dare to dream. I don't know if you've seen this firsthand, but I have, in terms of writing down my goals and seeing something begin to happen, something set in motion when I write something down and commit it to paper, and particularly when I put a due date next to it. I'll give you a real-life example that's very fresh in my mind. In December of this last year, 2011, and in fact, on December the 16th, 2011, I finished my goals for this year, my top 10 goals for this year. Number one was to get the book Platform on the New York Times bestsellers list by May the 30th. And that, as it turns out, was exactly the day that the book got on the New York Times bestsellers list. Now, I'd like to believe that that could work with every goal, but all I had to do was to write it down, put a date beside it, and just magically, you know, the goal would come to pass. It hasn't worked that way for me because of this little problem called execution. You actually have to work. It's not like, at least in my experience, like The Secret, where you just let this intention loose in the universe and then hope, you know, that it comes to pass. But I'll tell you what it does do, and what it did for me is it set some things in motion in terms of, if that goal is important, what do I need to do to bring it to pass? How do I need to begin to think about the book differently? What would have to be true if that was going to come to pass? And so I started doing those things and started really focusing on them. I think it'll be helpful to you as you begin to build a platform is be very specific about the outcomes that you want. Third step is to build your home base. Build your home base. And this is an important aspect of platform building. In fact, this is the heart of it, really, and it's what I call in the book a social media framework, and I picked this up from Chris Brogan and my friend John Dale and kind of adapted it, but here's the idea. It's so overwhelming when you think of all the different social media out there. You've got blogs and podcasts and video channels, and then you have all the social media, Twitter, Facebook, all the rest, and it can seem overwhelming, but I want you to consider it like this. The first and foremost thing you need is a home base. This is a place in cyberspace that you own, that you control, that you have 100% control of the messaging and the branding. And this, for most people, is going to be a blog. It could be a podcast. It could even be a video blog. But again, it's a place that you own and control. It's not Facebook, and it's not Twitter, because you don't own them, and you sure don't control them. but it's got to be something you own and control. That's a home base. The second aspect of the social media framework is what I call embassies. These are places where you have a presence. You don't own them. You don't control them. You have credentials to be able to log in, and you have a presence. This would be Facebook, Twitter, Google+, LinkedIn, Pinterest, whatever it is, and whatever they'll build tomorrow. Those are the embassies. Those are the places where you're doing your outreach. You're going out into the marketplace, but this is an important thing, always referring back to your home base. And that's where you want to give the bulk of your attention, the bulk of your time, and commit the bulk of your resources is to building out that home base and getting that right. That's where you're going to engage your fans and your followers and your prospects and your customers. So that's step number three, build your home base. Step number four is to expand your reach. You know, you get a home base. Well, now what? You know, it's not just like you build it and they will come. People start showing up. A few will. But you're not going to grow your traffic until you take this step to expand your reach. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with marketing. And the reason they're uncomfortable with marketing is because they're familiar with, or they think that marketing is like what I call marketing 1.0 and what Seth Godin calls interruption-based marketing. But this is where people are spamming you, essentially, with irrelevant, unanticipated, impersonal messages. Like, I love watching the Today Show when I get ready for work in the morning. But inevitably, a car commercial comes on. You know what I'm talking about. Or a furniture commercial. And for some reason, it seems like the volume on my TV goes up by about 10 decibels, and some guy's screaming at me about the special that they're running. And it makes me, you know, fumble for the remote, hit the mute button, and then I try to remember to turn it back on when the programming actually comes on, and after a while, I just turn the TV off. That's the kind of marketing that most of us don't like, we find annoying, and frankly, isn't working that well anymore. You can kiss that kind of marketing goodbye. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kind of marketing that really is about sharing. When you're passionate about something, and you're talking to them about that, you're not selling, you're just sharing. You're sharing your passion with somebody who seems to have an interest or who has given you permission to talk to them about that topic. This over this last weekend, Gail and I have been looking for a new car, and we've been really kind of, you know, combing the market, trying to decide what we want. There's a bazillion choices out there. So we decided that we would get an electric car. We're, you know, excited, frankly, about the environmental friendliness of that. We're also excited about, you know, getting our country off being dependent on foreign oil. And we just thought it would be kind of fun. And, you know, to be honest, I'm kind of a gadget guy. So, you know, just another gadget. So we bought a Nissan Leaf. And, you know, I found myself, even since this weekend, talking to several people about it. Even when I pulled up to Whole Foods the other day, we went into shop. And so we plugged it in. And we had a couple of people, as they were coming out of the store, stop and ask us about the car. Well, Nissan isn't paying me a commission. I was just sharing with them about the car because I was passionate about it. And that's what you got to get your mind around. That's marketing 2.0. It really does have to do with sharing. And it really has to do with focusing on adding value to other people. And this is why I believe that my blog has grown and why my Twitter account has grown is because I'm trying to focus on sharing value with other people. I'm trying to give, whether it's links to articles that my followers will find helpful or resources that I think can use in their life that will make them better people, more effective business people, whatever it is. Generosity is really the strategy in the context of sharing that makes you effective. As it turns out, the old biblical phrase, it's more blessed to give than to receive, is a brilliant marketing strategy. But you've got to get out there in those embassies, social media, and be generous and share your passion and refer people back to your home base. Then step five, and this is the final one, is to engage your tribe. And Seth Godin first, I think, coined or applied this phrase to marketing or to a platform when he talked about it in his book, Tribes, which if you haven't heard, I highly encourage you to read that book. It's really, really foundational. But tribes used to be about geography or shared ethnicity, culture, or common history. But according to Seth, and I think he's right, a tribe today is wherever you have a group of people that share your passion, have a way of communicating with one another, and are willing to follow your leadership. And we don't have time tonight to get into some examples like I usually do when I speak on this topic, but some examples of tribes would be Apple fans. Just go to your local Apple store, and you'll see they're a tribe. Actually, it's probably more like a cult, but it's definitely a tribe. Or Dave Ramsey fans, if you're familiar with Dave Ramsey, good friend of mine, or Harley Davidson enthusiasts. These are all examples of tribes, people who share a passion, have a way of communicating with one another, and are willing to follow somebody's leadership. Another thing about engaging your tribe is that social media today is not about a monologue. It's about a dialogue, and I would encourage you to think about it like you're hosting a dinner party. And you're inviting people over to your house, or in this case, your home base. And it would be weird if you did that and then just disappeared. And a lot of people do this on their blog. You know, they write a blog post. They don't invite people into a conversation. They close down the comments. They don't engage with their best fans. And I want to say, no, do the opposite of that. You need to engage with the people that are on your home base. You need to be able to listen to them. You need to be able to give feedback. You need to further the conversation. And I talk about a lot of ways to do that in the book. And then, most of all, you need to observe the 20-to-1 rule. Social media is not like direct response marketing where you just bludgeon people with one mailing after another or one contact after another, hoping that they eventually cave in and buy your product. No, that's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about the 20-to-1 rule where you've essentially got to make about 20 relational deposits for every transactional or marketing withdrawal that you make. And I don't know if the ratio is 20-to-1 or 15-to-1. I'm using it really directionally to say that you've got to give a whole lot more than you ask if you're going to be effective at marketing and building a platform for yourself. So step one, start with wow. Step two, prepare to launch. Step three, build your home base. Step four, expand your reach. And step five, engage your tribe. Now, let me just end this portion of our call with a story, and then we'll open it up to some questions. Years ago, I was invited by a manager for one of our top authors. It's actually Andy Andrews' manager, a guy by the name of Robert Smith, who's a dear friend of mine who lives in the Nashville area. We had just begun this publishing journey with Andy Andrews. His first book was about to come out. And Robert said to me, he said, we would love to have you on the same page with us. And something that's been influential in our business development has been Tony Robbins. So we would like you to go to Dallas. We'll pay your way and attend his seminar. So Gail and I said, great. You know, honestly, we've wanted to go for years, and this would be a great experience. So we went. The first night, we're listening to Tony talk. He's a very, very compelling speaker. And at one point, he says, look, he says, tonight, when you walk on the fire, and then he went on and talked about what that would mean. Well, I thought he was using just a metaphor, you know, talking about walking on the fire, you know, some metaphor for overcoming adversity or something. And he said it a couple more times, and I looked at Gail, and I thought, what's up with this? Then he finally said, you're going to walk on fire, and I realized he was talking about literal fire. And in point of fact, that night at about midnight, we ended up with, I don't know, maybe there were 2,000 people at that conference walking over this hot bed of coals. And it was about maybe 15 feet long, about 30 inches wide, about probably 6 inches deep, and it was 1,200 degrees. And I've actually done that twice now, walked over fire. But I don't understand why I didn't catch on fire. I don't understand why I didn't melt. I don't understand the physics of how it works. But here's what I do understand. Once you take that first step, you keep walking. And the thing that I would say to you in trying to build a platform, some of you are trying to get it all figured out before you take that first step. And what I want to say is don't bother. If you take the first step in building your platform, you'll figure out the rest. And I think it's almost a matter of stewardship that you have to be responsible with that first step, do the next right thing, take the next clear step, and believe that the rest of it will open up as you're faithful in those small things. So, you know, you just got to ask yourself, what would a platform mean for you? What would it mean for your product? What would it mean for your service? What would it mean for your brand? What would it mean for you personally if you had a platform. And I don't think you're on this call by accident. I think there's a purpose in everything that happens, but I believe this is your time. You have an unprecedented opportunity to build a platform. The technology is available like never before. All you've got to do is choose to use it and to access it. So, Daniel, with that, let's open it up to questions.
Fantastic. Well, again, folks, let me remind you, if you do have a question or a comment and you're on Twitter or Facebook, feel free to post that there and use the hashtag, which is kind of the pound sign, platform book. Again, it's hashtag platform book. I'm going to ask Mike a question that is one that's kind of come in from a number of folks, and while he's answering that, if you're live on the line, we're going to try something a little new with some of the technology that we're using here tonight. If you have a question and you're live on the phone, you've dialed in on the phone, and you have a question, hit *2 on your phone, and that will let me know that you have a question, and then I'll let you know when to ask that once Michael gets through answering this first question. So again, it's *2. If you have a question, that will virtually raise your hand where I can see you, and we'll recognize you in a bit to ask your question live. But Mike, first, from the folks who were emailing in with their questions and whatnot, a heavy theme from a lot of new folks is how do you begin if you are someone who maybe is unemployed or you don't have financial resources? How can you get involved? There's a kind of, it seems to be a perception that you can't create WOW out there unless you have a lot of money to make WOW happen.
Boy, that's a great question, and it's absolutely and utterly not true. This is part of what Stephen Pressfield talks about in Do the Work and the War of Art when he talks about the resistance. And it's any time that you purpose to do something important, there's going to be resistance. And I don't necessarily mean this in a spiritual sense, but it's just kind of a phenomenon that anytime you begin a creative work or try to accomplish something significant, it's going to be opposed. There's going to be resistance. It's that little voice that all of us hear in our heads that if it's not money, it's some other excuse. Like, you don't have the time, you don't have the money, nobody will listen to you, you don't have anything important to say. All those voices go off. Those actually should be like a Geiger counter. They should be a signal to us that we're getting close to what we need to be doing. So it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. In fact, you can get started for free. Then I would encourage people to do this. If you have not blogged before, that'd be the first place to start. Go to WordPress.com, open a free account, and start expressing yourself. If writing's not your thing, think about a podcast. That can be done also with real low technology. Or think about it just a video cast. Use your iPhone or use a cheap flip camera. It doesn't have to be incredibly well produced. In fact, I would say that almost works against you in today's environment and decreases people's willingness to believe in you if it's too slick.
Great. Very good. All right, we're going to try this. If you were calling in from a 404 area code and just did the *2 to raise your hand, you can ask Mike your question now.
Thank you very much, Mike. Good evening. My question to you is, particularly when we come with regards to the WOW, I don't have a particular product. I want to build my platform. I have bought my WordPress and everything. What would WOW look like for you if I'm not necessarily, I don't have a book I'm selling, I don't have an ebook as yet, but I'm willing to step forward and get started with blogging and doing everything else. What would be a WOW? How would you break that WOW if I'm not necessarily bringing a physical product versus bringing my passion on leadership, my passion on what I would like to share as a starting point?
Okay. Great question. And I think that all of us need to think of product more expansively than just a physical artifact. It could be a service. It could be a brand. In your particular case, and I was the same way for years before I had a product, it's just my creative output. You know, it's your blog posts. That's where you've got to have WOW. And again, I want to just define WOW as exceeding what your customers or your prospects or, in your case, your readers expect and doing that consistently. You won't do it every time, and don't get too hung up on this, but your goal is to articulate what they expect and then to exceed that in some way in the content that you're offering, maybe the level of engagement, your willingness to interact with them. You know, the creative possibilities are endless here, but it's a great question.
Great. All right, we'll take another live call. If you dialed in on a 423 area code and press star 2 to ask Mike a question, you are live. Go ahead.
Yes, my question was simply this. Is it possible to train your tribe? If you're trying to engage your tribe and they are not, you're having trouble getting them to engage with you, is the error on your fault that you're not doing what you need to be doing, or could it be possible that it's on the other side and people are not knowing how to respond back?
Well, it could be either. Let me just pick up on one thing you said, and that is, you know, is it possible to train your tribe? I would say, you know, it's definitely possible to serve your tribe, and that's how I try to think about it. So I'm willing to accept responsibility if they're not engaging. I recently spoke at a financial seminar in Orlando, and after I finished, I thought, man, the audience was so dead. I just, you know, I felt like I was, you know, trying to raise the dead to try to get a response for them, from them. And another speaker came off the platform after I finished, and he made the same comment. And it would have been easy for us to walk away and just say, you know, the problem was with the audience. But the more I thought about that, the more I thought, you know, really it's our responsibility as speakers to get these people engaged and to be able to connect with them in a way that makes them want to engage. So all that to say is, I think you have to own responsibility for the engagement yourself. You can't control them. You can control yourself. Having said that, I think there are some tools that you can use. I talk about those in the platform book, in that fifth part of the book about engagement, particularly about getting more comments. But I think the more that you're willing to put yourself out there, create good content, ask open-ended questions, and participate in a conversation, I think the more you'll find that people are willing to do that because they go, okay, if he's all in and he's willing to contribute, then I'm willing to do the same thing. And I've done that on my blog over time, but it didn't happen overnight.
Great. Mike, this is the million-dollar question that seems that was asked more than any other question that was submitted by folks who were registering. It's the, do you have a quick start process, or is there a one primary step that you would do to create a platform?
Well, the short answer is no. And this is what I didn't write about this in platform, but I do have a blog post about this, and it's what I sometimes refer to as silver bullet thinking. And it's the idea that if we can just find this one thing, you know, we'll unlock all the secrets of the universe, and suddenly we'll have a platform, and we won't have to do what everybody else has had to do, which is, you know, take some time, find our voice, really work at it. But it's not like that. I mean, I wished it were. You know, I could sell a course on that and make a ton of money. You know, it's easier than it's ever been, but that doesn't mean it's easy. I think building a platform really takes doing a lot of things right and doing those over a period of time. The good news is it's not rocket science. You know, anybody can do this. This is what I tried to set forth in the book, but it does take some work. If you're going to start one place, though, I would start by building the platform. And that's where I think it's got to, or start by building the home base, excuse me. That's where I would begin, is do what I said earlier, which was get a blog started or get a podcast started and get something that can become your home base. That's the place to start.
Great. And we had a question. This was another popular topic from a writer's perspective, those who are authors that are on the call with us. Is the aspect of platform building different from someone who is writing fiction versus nonfiction?
Yeah, it is. You have to be a little bit more creative. Now, I will say this, that I often hear novelists making the excuse that they can't build a platform. And the truth is, many of them are, like I am, they're introverts, and they'd rather write and create and not have to go out and engage with the public. And I know that's a big stereotype. Not everybody's like that. But I'm, at least a lot of the novelists I know are like that. They would like to think that they could write their books and the publisher would make them famous and everything would take care of itself. But they have to engage in platform building themselves. I have an entire appendix in the book written specific for novelists with some ideas for some topics that they can blog on. And we don't have time to get into all those. But I think I've got like 12 or 13 ideas there for blog posts that they can create. I personally love reading fiction, and I love hearing writers talk about how they write fiction. One of my favorite books ever was Stephen King's autobiography, and I just loved learning about him and the whole process of writing. So people are interested if you'll take time to connect with them. So a lot of ideas there that you can go to, but I do think novelists also have to build a platform.
Fantastic. All right, again, folks, I'm going to ask Mike another question submitted by those who registered, but we'll go back and take another live question or two here in a second. So if you have one, press star 2 on your phone, and we'll be able to recognize you. Just be listening so for your area code when I do call upon you. But again, it's star 2 from your phone to raise your hand. All right, Mike, our next question comes in the form of topics. We had several folks that asked if you are someone who has, I guess, that tension between someone who has multiple ideas or concepts, how do they, is it better to stick with one niche focus, or can they do something where they're talking about multiple topics from their blog?
This is a difficult one, and I've experimented with this a lot. You know, when I first started blogging in 2004, my blog was called, had the same URL at michaelhyatt.com, but it was called Working Smart, and I was really just blogging about productivity hacks. You know, this was before Life Hacker, but I was writing about productivity hacks because that interested me. But as I went along, I found that it was too narrow, that I got bored as a blogger, and I didn't really feel like I had that much more to say about it, or not enough to really build a platform. And so I expanded it, and I started writing about publishing, which was, of course, my profession. And then I started writing about leadership as I moved up in the corporate ranks. So I dialed it out a little bit. I expanded the focus a little bit. So I would say a couple of things. One is that don't be afraid to experiment. It takes you a while to find your voice, and you can shift it. You know, I've done that successfully a couple times now, and it's definitely possible. Having said that, I honestly wish I was a little more narrowly focused on my blog. I think the more you can be really laser-locked on a niche, the more successful you'll be. But, you know, you've also got to stay interested as a blogger, and that to me is the most important thing, is I want to be consistent in my writing, and it's got to be a wide enough field of vision that it keeps me engaged in the process, because if I lose interest, nobody's going to be interested in reading me.
Let me bounce that into one other follow-up question on that, Mike, that we've had. With regard to when you're building your platform, when your URL or your blog, what are your thoughts about a named blog like michaelhyatt.com or Chris Brogan versus something that is niche blog titled like Temp Blogger and things like that?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what the end game is going to be. You know, if you're trying to build a blog, for example, and flip it or sell it later, you know, build up an audience, and people do this all the time. They build up a blog, it becomes successful, and then they sell it, whether it's, you know, Huffington Post or Life Hacker or any of those. Those were built up with a singular focus that could be portable in a sense. It didn't matter who owned it because the name transcended that. Obviously, I can't do that with MichaelHyatt.com because nobody's going to be interested in buying something that's got my name on it unless I'm involved. Same thing with personal services. Businesses, when you name a business after yourself, you kind of have the same problem. But I think you've got to ask what the end game is going to be. If you want to build a personal brand like I do that can kind of transcend all the various projects that I'm going to be interested in over the course of whatever remains of my life, then I want to link that to my personal brand so that people, the primary brand is michaelhyatt.com. So, you know, this year I've done the book on platform. Next year I'm planning to write a book on life planning. I've got a book on leadership that I want to do, and several other topics down the road, but I want the larger umbrella of my name to kind of be the anchor point. So I just think you kind of have to think about it. There's no right or wrong answer on this. I just have to think, you have to think what the end game is and what your strategic intentions are.
Great. All right, if you dialed in on the area code 417 and you have a question for Mike, you can go ahead.
Hey, Mike, this is Philip Rothschild. And
hey, Philip.
How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, Mike, one of the things that I was going to, I'm always amazed at your responsiveness to comments that I see on your blog or comments on Facebook. And I'm just wondering what process or tool that you use to be so responsive to all of those comments that come in on a variety of platforms, whether that be Facebook or Twitter or your blog. And I noticed recently, or not recently, but in the near past, you've kind of had a community of folks that you're using now on your MichaelHyatt.com. Can you tell us a little bit about how you make decisions or your rules of thumb when it comes to how much time you're going to spend responding on each of those platforms or not?
Yeah, great question, Philip. What you can do in the early days doesn't necessarily scale, and here's what I mean by that. You know, back when I was blogging and I was getting, you know, a couple comments on every blog post or maybe even a dozen comments, I could respond to every one. And then it got a little more difficult, and then I thought it was a little bit weird if I was responding to everyone. It's kind of like having a dinner party and people come over and you feel the need to comment on every comment that's made at your dinner party. That's just weird. So then I thought, well, you know, I want to read every comment, but I'm not going to be able to respond to every comment, or I don't think it would be good to respond to every comment because I want people interacting with one another. But typically here's what happens today, because the community has gotten larger. It got so unwieldy last year that I was really having difficulty managing it. I was getting really bogged down in all the comments and feeling an obligation to get through them. Now, one of the things that made it easy was I used Disqus, D-I-S-Q-U-S, which is a third-party commenting system that integrates with WordPress. I highly, highly recommend it. A lot of the big sites use it. But it has a reply-by email feature so that all the comments come to me by email, and I just have to reply to them like email if I want to choose to reply. But even that last fall was kind of unwieldy. So Andy Traub, a friend of mine, said to me, why don't you get some community leaders, recruit some community leaders? And I thought, well, okay, but why would anybody want to do that? And he said, well, you have no idea. I mean, people really want to make a contribution. You've given, they want to give back. And so I did that. Long story short was we had 100 people, over 100 people apply to be a community leader. We picked 10, and they have been fabulous. They've been with us from the beginning, and they helped me manage that so that we can point people in the right direction. We can give them helpful resources, answer their questions, and the burden's not all on me. What I do today, Philip, is that I typically get up in the morning, first thing after my blog post, and it posts at 4 a.m. Central every day. My email newsletter goes out with the blog post for that day at 6 a.m. Central. And so what I try to do is for about 30 to 45 minutes first thing in the morning, I reply to those initial comments. So I'm kind of priming the pump by engaging initially, and then I kind of shut it down. I won't look at it again till the end of the day, and I'll spend maybe, you know, 15 or 20 minutes at the end of the day looking at some of the posts, and I let my community leaders handle it throughout the day. So that's my current strategy.
Great. All right, our next question is from area code 416. If you dial in on a 416 area code and have a question for Mike, go ahead.
Thank you. How do you re-engineer or rebuild a platform for a ministry that's over 136 years old, and we are in the process of re-engaging and reimagining our purpose here in Canada? Do we shut down things like our magazine and traditional media and bulletins and church newsletters, et cetera, and just focus primarily on social media, or do we invest in both strategies equally? What do we do?
That's a great question. You know, as the CEO of Thomas Nelson, I presided over a old world media company. In fact, Thomas Nelson came into existence in 1798. So very old established publisher, and so we faced some of that at the same time. And one of the conclusions that I came to was that I was actually the CEO of two different companies. I was the CEO of a traditional publishing company that was doing its best to be successful with traditional media, but at the same time, I had to be the CEO of a new digital startup, and both of those things had to go at the same time. I didn't have the luxury of shutting down the traditional publishing business because a lot of people would have been out of work, probably including myself. No, I had to keep running that. There's still a demand for that. Not everybody's engaged in social media. People still consume traditional media. In fact, that's still the lion's share of traditional publishing, even though e-books are certainly growing quickly. So I think you have to see yourself as presiding over those two enterprises, and you can't probably neglect the first one as you're building the second one. This is just part of the shift. As you know, the glaciers begin to separate, you've got to, you know, just kind of have a foot on each one and be able to work them both.
Great. Okay, our next question, if you dialed in on 805 area code, on the 805 area code and had a question for Mike, you can go ahead.
Hey, Mike. I had a question about Facebook giveaways. I recently discovered the rules that you can't ask for likes and comments, that sort of thing, to have a promotional giveaway on Facebook. Do you have ideas on how, I mean, I want to do everything, you know, legally according to Facebook, according to the guidelines. Do you have ideas about giveaways? I've heard of apps, North Social, stuff like that. Do you like those? Any other ideas?
Well, the way I do giveaways, and I do these frequently, I do usually a couple of these a month. They're usually books that I like and want to promote. And when I was the CEO of Thomas Nelson, they were always Thomas Nelson books. Now I have a little more variety. They're still predominantly Thomas Nelson books because I'm still the chairman and love what we publish. But, yeah, I try to give them away on my home base. Now, this could be a valid strategy for building your presence in an embassy like Facebook or on Twitter. But I think I would still manage the giveaway back on my home base because that's really where I want the engagement and everything else to happen. So, Daniel, I don't know. You're a Facebook expert. You may have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it really, you know, there you can utilize the apps that are out there. There's a ton. There's Wildfire, the North Social, like you mentioned. There's some that are paid, some that are free. Just really depends on what type of promotion it is. But I fully agree with Mike. If you can leverage social media, whether it be Facebook or Twitter, to push it back into your home base, if that's your blog or something else where you can make the announcement on Facebook but then provide a URL that drives them back into your to your blog where there might be the sign-up form or things like that, it's normally it's a good strategy too because it's going to help cross-promote your home base as well. And as you get bigger and you might start running more promotions on Facebook, then normally that's when you start looking at the apps when you've got significant enough traffic to drive that through.
Hey, Daniel, right. One of the things I'll mention, too, is that on my blog when I do a giveaway, in order to qualify to be picked to win whatever the giveaway is, I do require that people leave a comment on the blog. I require that they then tweet out something on Twitter or post something on Facebook. So that does kind of create some interest in those different embassies and the likes and the shares and all the other things that we're after.
And I think, Mike, you use a custom form, too, that they have to go into. So it's not just blog comments that you're passing them through. Is that right?
Yeah, I am capturing all that information using an embedded Woo form. I think you use that system, too. But it's very good for building forms, and it integrates right into my blog.
Exactly. All right, we'll take our next live question. If you dialed in from area code 605, area code 605, you can go ahead for Michael. And this will we'll probably have time for maybe one or two more questions. So if you have a question, press star 2 to raise your hand, and then we'll be coming to the end of our time. So caller, go ahead.
Hi, Michael. My name is Linda from South Dakota. Thank you so much for the great information, and I'm looking forward to reading the rest of your book. I am in the process of writing a book myself and seeing that I probably should go the self-publishing route just because my platform isn't very big yet. But would somebody like me know when it would be a good decision to start exploring the idea of trying to get a publisher to accept my proposal and go down that route as opposed to self-publishing?
Well, I think that can happen at any time. I mean, you might even be on the parallel track where you're searching probably first for an agent, frankly, not a publisher, because you need somebody to represent you and get you in the front door to publishing companies. And by the way, I've got a list at michaelhyatt.com of literary agents, and you can just do a search there in the search bar for that, and some of those will come up. But I think that can happen at any time. Don't sell yourself short. And just because you've been rejected by a traditional publisher, don't give up on that either. My first book was rejected by 28 publishers before I finally found number 29 that said yes. Andy Andrews' first book, The Traveler's Gift, was rejected 52 times before Thomas Nelson finally agreed to say yes. And by the way, we said no twice officially before we said yes. So I wouldn't give just up on traditional publishing, but I think it's appropriate at any time. And even if you self-published and it's been successful, you could take that to a traditional publisher and take the posture of, look, I've proven the concept in the marketplace. There's an audience for this. I want to take it to a broader audience.
Mike, on that same tone, I'll take a question from someone who wrote in. when you are working on a proposal, there seems to be the confusion out there of should you write the entire manuscript or a few sample chapters? How does that process work best?
Yeah, I have two e-books that people might want to look up later, and I wrote these because I've answered this question so many times, I thought I would try to answer this type of thing definitively about proposals, and of course, I've reviewed thousands of proposals as a publisher. When it comes to nonfiction, and by the way, those e-books are called Writing a Winning Book Proposal, one's nonfiction and one's for fiction. When it comes to nonfiction, do not write the whole manuscript. The publishers want their fingerprints on it. They want to give you input, and it's frankly a waste of your time to get too far along, more than a couple of sample chapters. You will have to do that, but more than a couple of sample chapters, you shouldn't do. When it comes to fiction, on the other hand, you typically have to have an entire manuscript done because they want to see how the story is going to resolve, how it's going to play out, how your character development and plot development and all the rest works. So again, nonfiction, do not write the whole manuscript. Fiction, you're probably going to have to write the whole thing.
Great. All right, folks, before we wrap up and I give Mike a chance to leave us with any parting words, I do want to remind you that we will send out a recording link of this call within 24 hours of this call's completion. You are more than welcome to share that with others, listen again, and do with whatever you wish. As Mike mentioned earlier in the call, we do have a special URL for folks who have not purchased Platform yet and would like to. It's michaelhyatt.com/teleseminar. And on that page, I believe there are three bonus offers that you can take advantage of when you purchase the book. And, Mike, is that offer up till the end of the week, I believe?
Yeah, it's actually up until Monday. Is that the 25th? Monday the 25th at midnight Pacific time. So I tried to give it a week.
Fantastic. And that's some of the great bonuses that will help you reinforce your platform as you're creating it and to just help you along the way. Mike, if you've got any parting words for us, feel free.
Yeah, I would just say that kind of what I said earlier, and that is don't listen to those nagging little voices that tell you you can't do this, you're not important, you don't have anything to say, others might be successful, but you can't. Forget all that. I want to ask you a question that my daughter often asks, and I overheard her asking a friend, and it was a brilliant question. She said, what would you do if you were brave? And I would ask those of you who are on the call, what would you do if you were brave, if you were courageous? What would be the next step that you would take in building your platform? I really do believe your time is now. This is the opportunity you've been waiting for. Go out there and do it. The world needs what you've got to say. They need your product. They need your service. Don't be bashful. We're counting on you to deliver it.
Fantastic. All right, everyone, thank you for your time tonight. If you enjoyed the call and feel inclined, feel free to leave us a message on Twitter with that hashtag platform book, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So fabulous.